Accession number 19783, Reel 1.
Today is Friday the 25th September, and we're interviewing Mr. Daniel Faulkner in his home in Muswell Hill, and this is for the Holocaust exhibition project for the Imperial War Museum. Danny, I'd first like to start off with you telling us when and where you were born.
I was born on the 12th July 1912. In a small little place called Landshut, which is was the domain of a Count Potocki, was his name. I went to elementary school there, and after a few years in elementary school, we moved over to a bigger town called Rzeszów. I don't know whether you are familiar with the geography. It was halfway between Krakow and Lwów. This was a bigger town. It had two state high schools and of course many other schools. I was fortunate enough to have an entry into the high school, state high school. There I matriculated. There was a vibrant Jewish life there. We had a society, for a cultural society. We had sports clubs. We had, of course, wherever Jew lived, Jews always formed a self-help society, which is called in Hebrew Gemilat Chesed, where people who were impoverished or struggled, they always could find help. During my years in the high school, of course, there were debating societies, there were political societies of various shades and shapes, and we had also even a Jewish orchestra where people who were professional tried to teach younger generations in the skills of various instruments, so that we had quite a full life culturally. Of course, there was no radio or television. We had the beginning of crystal radios, which was still in its infancy. So the only way of improving one's cultural life was either to read a lot or to discuss a lot. There was a Jewish cultural house. It was called the people's house, and where there were libraries of and reading rooms where people used to come without any fee and read all the newspapers of the world, whether German, English or French, and of course Polish and Jewish.
Tell me about your father and your mother.
My father, I lost my father very early in life, so that I have very little recollection about him. I know only that after my father married my mother, his parents thought that their function in life was fulfilled, and there was nothing else for them to do, so they decided then to go to the Holy Land to spend the last years of their life there. And the grandfather died soon after he arrived there, but the grandmother lived there for quite some time and kept in correspondence with my mother. I don't know whether I should mention the fact that when the grandmother in Jerusalem heard that my mother is pregnant, she went to Rachel's tomb, and she measured up the Rachel's tomb with a wide band, and afterwards sent this band to us in Poland so that my mother should wear it, and it would supposed to ease up her pregnancy and her delivery. And this is what my mother told me.
How important was the observation of the Jewish religion in the family?
It was important at that time. Of course, everybody was religious, because there was no other schism, no other thoughts. But it was also mixed with liberalism. It was important to acquire secular knowledge as much as religious knowledge, because we could see that progress could only be achieved by acquiring secular education.
Tell me about how Purim and Passover and other religious holidays were commemorated.
As I mentioned before, I lost my father very early in life, and I was brought up in the household of my grandparents on the mother's side. And the grandfather was, of course, conducting the Pesach service, which is the every year. And I would rather describe him visually. He was very, very meticulous about his dress. He was spotlessly dressed and wore quite a white beard. He looks more patriarchal than I can imagine, than anyone can imagine. And he also took part in communal life. As you know, at that time, the part of Poland where we lived was under Austrian occupation before Poland became independent. And the regime of the Austrian occupation was rather milder than the others. And he was so that the Jews had a certain self-government as far as religious and social affairs are concerned. He was a representative of the Jewish community in the Jewish affairs, and also he was a representative of the Jewish community in the municipal affairs. And once a year, usually on New Year, he used to go in as a delegate together with a few others to sent good wishes for the new year to the local count, so that he was quite prominent in the Jewish community there. and they regarded him as a wise man. But as things are, at the age of 62, he died, and he was regarded as reaching quite a right age, a right ripe age, at 62.
Would you describe your family as a prosperous family?
No, far from it. We were always on the edge of utter poverty. I remember how my grandmother used to speak to grandfather, "You are giving advice to everybody in the town. Why can't you give yourself advice to earn a little bit more so that we could afford something better?" This stands out always in my mind.
How, in this family which was on the edge of poverty, did you as a child amuse yourself?
Well, as I said before, I used to go to the library every week and bring quite a number of books home. I read avidly. Of course, at that time, I read only in Polish. And so this was part of the entertainment. The other part of my entertainment was playing chess or to do sports, to go swimming, ice skating, this sort of thing. And of course, I belonged also to a Zionist organization at that time. And we had once a week meetings, educational meetings mainly.
What were your ambitions as a young man?
My ambition was to get a university education. Unfortunately, I could not achieve that for various reasons. First, that I couldn't afford it, and also what I wanted to study was practically impossible to achieve. I wanted to study medicine or any other branch of science.
Why was it impossible for you to achieve this ambition?
As I said, the entry to universities were restricted, particularly for minorities, and also I just couldn't afford it. I didn't have the means for it.
Poland regained its independence in 1919 after the First World War. Could you describe what it was like to be a Jew and living in Poland before 1939?
Before 1939, Jews struggled to make a living, but in the 30s, after the death of Pilsudski, which was the leader, various other personalities came into power, and for them to appeal to the populace, they adopted rather a policy where Jews were not welcomed, and when right-wing parties came to the fore and officially proclaimed anti-Semitism, the ministers in the then government proclaimed, yes, an economic boycott against the Jews, yes, but to beat them up and to murder them, this we are against. This was the Prime Minister Skłodkowski who uttered these words.
What personal experience did you have of anti-Semitism?
I personally did not experience anti-Semitism against myself as such, but still in the high schools, while I was still in the high school, when there were riots in universities, it was immediately reflected in the high school as well, to such an extent that they started already to beat up Jewish boys in the school and so forth. The official anti-Semitism started to permeate into Poland after, in the late 30s, that in 35, 36, which when Germany started to beam anti-Semitic broadcast into Poland.
And what kind of impact did that have on you? Did you ever hear, for example, Hitler's voice on the radio?
Oh, yes. We had the ravings of Hitler's voice, but we thought, well, this is only happening in Germany. Surely it will not come to Poland. And at that time, Hitler directed his attention mainly to Czechoslovakia, and first to Austria and then to Czechoslovakia. But then when he got a hold of Austria and Czechoslovakia, finally he directed his attention to Poland and the Polish corridor, which was a part of Poland which divided Danzig from Germany.
Being a member of a Zionist organization, did you have serious thoughts about emigrating from Poland?
Yes. Yes, I had. Because I realized that to achieve any position of importance in Poland was rather difficult. And of course we were dreaming of building up a new land, and at that time there were movements in Poland to form outposts where young people will train to work on the land and to establish this in Palestine at that time.
Can you describe how important that belief, that Zionist belief was to you?
Yes, from time to time we had lectures. I remember, I don't remember exactly which year it was. It was in the 1930s. A Zionist leader by the name of Jabotinsky came over, and he was a fantastic speaker. He could rouse the crowd. He was fluent in many languages, but at that time he addressed the audience in Yiddish. The hall was packed to capacity, and he was describing, urging the people to leave Poland and to go to form a new country in Israel. And then in the middle of his speech, suddenly the lights faded and the hall was plunged into darkness. He shouted and urged the people to sit quiet in their seats, and he continued speaking in the dark until a few minutes later someone came with a candle onto the stage. He finished his speech. Then we learned that the communists cut off the electricity because they wanted to interrupt the speech. At that time, because of the poverty in which Jews lived in Poland, the majority of Polish Jews lived in utter poverty, although there were a few who were rich. For them, the only solution and the only vision of help and and solution was to join the Communist Party. Who at that time imagined what the Communist Party represents? And the Communist Party promised those who have got nothing that they will get.
You became a reserve officer in the Polish Army. Can you describe what it was like to be perhaps one of the few Jews in the Polish Army who actually had commissioned rank?
It was not officially directed against the Jews, but here and there you had to jump higher hurdles in order to achieve something. And it was more to ability to achieve the great than anything else.
We're going to move forward to when war broke out and you were pushed back along with the rest of the Polish army and eventually were forced to surrender. What were your thoughts when you first came across a German soldier face to face?
Well, before the war broke out, several months before, I would say about 4 months or more, the Polish government ordered a silent mobilization where young officers and soldiers were brought back into the colors. And I was mobilized before the war. And as a young officer, I was sent to the very border of East Prussia and Poland. And there I got my first christening, because the German army opened an artillery barrage on us. We were in dugouts, and a few days before that, we were issued with new new weapons. We had such one thing in our dugout, and I saw a German soldier with another soldier on a motorcycle with an attachment, and he was riding her in front of us about 300, 400 yards, and I took aim, and of course this caused even more havoc because the German artillery aimed at us, and we were under terrible pressure. But finally at night we withdrew from our position, and from then on we withdrew all the time through Poland southeastwards, and towards the end of September we were in a forest, and our division surrendered. And then, of course, we were all taken to a temporary prison of war camp, which was only surrounded by barbed wire, nothing else.
Were you singled out for particular attention and other Jewish prisoners among the Polish soldiers?
No, and at that time the Germans did not know whether there are any Jews or not in the unit. It was a whole division. Only the Polish people came near the wires, the barbed wire, and they mentioned that that there were in this camp other units, and the Germans selected the Jews and marched them off in a different direction to the rest. And this was enough for me to think of an escape. And I managed to escape from that temporary prisoner of camp.
Cut there. Do you want a glass of water, Danny?
No, I don't know why.
You eventually found yourself in Warsaw after escaping and after several adventures. The Germans by then were imposing all sorts of restrictions, starting with a decree to wear an armband of the Star of David. Can you describe what it was like to walk around so marked out?
Well, every order that came from the German authorities was also connected with punishment, and the punishment was severe, to say the least. So everybody tried to, even children, small children, had to wear these armbands. And I remember, I was still young and vigorous, walking along the pavement, and two Germans passed by, and one hit me, and my first reaction was to hit him back. And then, of course, I reflected that this would be suicidal, and I walked past. Jews were not supposed to walk on the pavement, only on the road. And this was before the imposition of the ghetto or anything else. And of course, then came the ghetto. And this was a terrible upheaval. Thousands and thousands of people had to move in and out. Those Poles who lived among the Jews had to move out from this designated area, and the designated area was only a small corner of Warsaw, the most dilapidated part of Warsaw, and the Jews who lived throughout Warsaw had to move in. And this was a period which is imprinted on my mind. People with all sorts of chattel moving in and out. And finally, one settled wherever one could. And of course, it was very crowded. To add to the confusion and to add to the poverty, the Germans emptied also various villages and townlets from the district of Warsaw into Warsaw itself. The result was that it was impossible to walk on the pavement. You could only hardly walk on the road. It was so dense. It was terrible. And of course, to add to the confusion and to add to this terrible fear, the main Warsaw prison, the Pawiak, was within the area of the ghetto. And all prisoners, political or criminal, who were in the Pawiak, had to be taken from time to time to be interrogated by the Gestapo, and the Gestapo was outside the ghetto. So there was a constant traffic of half trucks which carried these prisoners to be interrogated, or after interrogation, back into the Pawiak. And they found a very ingenious way of intimidating the people by putting two assessments at the end, at the back end of these half tracks with whips. And as they traveled along the road, they just used the whips, and there was no failure to hit anyone, whether it was an old man or a woman or a child or anything else. And when you saw a dark black half truck running along, you had to run as well to avoid them.